welcome to Kangria, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And what an exciting week. We've been keeping an eye on some of the stories. Just for the sake of our listeners, my meeting with Catherine McKinney, who we were going to talk about city planning, which is always an exciting topic, that's been rescheduled. We'll get to it. We'll talk about city planning some other time. So what we're going to be talking about at the start of this week's show is we're going to be carrying on a conversation that we had about Hamilton last week.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was right in your backyard, as it were.
Sort of,
we
yeah.
contacted your range of sources, including but not limited to your mum. So what is your mum saying about what's happened next?
The best. So she called me to give me an update 2 days ago, actually. And just for funsies, I did not let her know that I have been using her as a source. Now, most of the things that she tells me, I'll look up later just to double check. There's a few things she tells me, and I'm like, I don't even care if it's true or not. It's just funny. But yeah, so there's a few things I've looked up afterwards to double check. And sure enough, she's more on the path than she's not. I don't want to spoil the resource. It's just hilarious. Anyway, point being, there is a bit of a kerfuffle going on where there are so many moving parts that nobody truly knows what's happening. That's definitely something that's come up. So anything that you read in the news, anything that we say now, it could be clarified, overturned, or denied within a week's time, because there's a lot going on. So with regards to whether or not Cedar, can't remember the last name, the
Hopperton.
Yeah, that's the one. So there are people saying they spotted Cedar at the event and that's why they were arrested. But then other people were saying Cedar was definitely not at the arrest and the police were targeting her. This is very much a sort of like conflicting eyewitness reports. But the thing is that there would have been like a million camera phone footage angles. So if they definitely got footage of who was doing what where, then they should just come out and say, we have found footage. But no one's talking about evidence as to whether or not somebody was or was not present. So the whole thing is just bizarre. There's a lot going on that no one's being told about. And I don't necessarily mean that in some kind of a fishy conspiratorial way.
Let's back up just a quick moment here. You mentioned Seba Hopperton. Let's give a bit of context for our listeners. Just to recap.
Hey, right, in case you missed last week.
Yeah, there was a protesters at Hamilton Pride.
Right.
They got into a bit of a violent kerfuffle with what are being nicknamed the Pride Protectors.
Okay.
They are a group that were broadly out of the anarchist social group in Hamilton.
Right.
They wore pink balaclavas.
Right.
And they held up a giant screen to literally curtain out these hateful protesters.
Right.
Now, the anti-gay protesters were definitely violent.
Yes.
There was one guy with a helmet, who we'll talk about in a bit, who committed multiple assaults.
Yes.
We also see that exact same guy in that exact same outfit and some of the others also being violent at the Toronto Eater Centre.
Yeah.
Protesting or being aggressive and violent in other prides.
Yeah.
So there was an anti-pride group that came to Hamilton.
Yes.
And the local Hamilton LGBT folks and anarchists, I think, in this case, held up a counter-protest. The next day, Cedar Hopperton, a trans individual who's an anarchist, who had been arrested for, I think it was like damage under 5,000 for leading a bit of a riot in 2010s.
It was not a good riot. I had no support for them.
Yeah, no, and I don't think anyone expects you to.
It was on Lock Street. It was like the antique district. It was all family-owned businesses, but the anarchists protested capitalism by destroying the storefronts of family businesses, which is, in two streets over, there's a whole bunch of corporate headquarters. So
yeah,
a lot of people were just like, what are you doing? Like, I might have supported you, but no.
So Hopperton was arrested the next day.
Yeah.
Effectively. Well, within a few days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there was a critique that why is it the first person the police arrest is a trans person?
Yeah.
And yet these nutters who come in and beat people up because they don't like pride are allowed to roam the streets. Is this a double standard? Now, Hopperton says that they weren't there. whole bunch of people said they never saw them there, bearing in mind there were people in balaclavas and hoods and things.
It's hard to say.
But Cedar Hopperton is also very thin and very tall and quite easy to spot in the crowd. So it's true. Yeah. You know, you're like, how can you... Anyways, so they went on hunger strike, Hopperton did, and they had their parole hearing on Tuesday.
Oh.
Or Thursday. I think it was Tuesday.
I missed that story.
Yeah, so the story happened that Hopperton had her parole hearing, awaiting the decision. Now, a lot of that one seems to be focusing, the discussion that happened there, focus around the City Hall conversation. So we do know that in the run-up to the event, or immediately after Pride, I think it was immediately after Pride, there was a City Hall conversation.
Yeah.
And she swore black and blue at the chief of police, telling them to sling the rock, essentially.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's a lot of conversation about that. They're waiting now for their parole decision. The police are opposing bail and parole, I think.
Okay.
Because they were suggesting, Hopperton was suggesting violence and basically telling people to do violent things. That's their argument.
Yeah.
And that by doing so, the fact that violence then occurred is a breach of their parole conditions. We'll have to see what the decision comes out as.
Yeah. I didn't hear about the bailing, but the something that you and I discussed last week that is apparently being brought up in the Hamilton area is the idea that they arrested Cedar first because they already knew who Cedar was. They had a home address and a phone number, and they just knew where to go. Whereas all the other protesters, you can't just arrest somebody until you double check that it was definitely them who did it. So they had to screen all the footage. They had to double check stuff. They had to go through all the blah, 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 usual investigation work that is involved in police work before you arrest someone.
Yeah.
So, and they did eventually arrest this other guy, but it took longer, and he looks like the actor who played Billy Elliot, and that's disappointing.
He is a disturbing man. So, the social media has dubbed this individual Helmet Guy.
Helmet Guy.
I, in last week's episode, as you may recall, called him a nutter with a hockey helmet. And I think I just referred to him as a nutter with a hockey helmet throughout the entire show.
Isn't even a hockey helmet. You don't know your sports well enough.
No, I don't know sports. I don't sports very well. Anyway.
He's probably a motorcycle helmet.
Christopher van der Weed has been arrested on two counts of assault with a weapon following the altercation at Pride. Now, van der Weed is 27 from Kitchener. So he came from Kitchener to Hamilton. This obviously continues to reinforce the argument that there were people coming in from all over the place.
Yeah.
The videos which show the violence is astonishing. In one scene, he just runs up and just like smacks someone right in the face with their helmet, essentially, which is just outrageous. Now, people identified van der Weed within a day or two. Like the community, I was telling you about that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That we aren't going to identify them because it wasn't confirmed. And the only source was this social anarchist website, which is not super reliable.
Yeah.
But now, you know, the CBC is reporting it. The police have issued the charges against them. So there is definitely... I think we can talk about it now. So van der Weed is the fourth arrest. Cedar Hopperton was the first.
Okay.
The other two were also two of the people that were the quote Pride protectors. They were the ones that were opposing the anti-Pride protesters.
Right. Okay.
So the argument is, you know, a lot of people are also concerned with the fact that it seems to be that the police aren't going particularly as much against those who were causing the kerfuffle versus those who were trying to protest against it. It's worth noting quickly that the two other people I just mentioned turned themselves in for breaching probation and participating in a demonstration that wasn't peaceful. So they turned themselves in instead of being...
But after Cedar was arrested. Yeah, so absolutely. They probably saw the writing on the wall and they knew that they would go lenient if they turned themselves in.
Yeah, it'd be better for them if they showed up.
So, I mean, it's on the one hand, I mean, it's so complicated. I understand what they're trying to do, but if you show up ready for violence and then no violence happens, like, I don't see that happening. I abhor violence in all of its forms, and I would rather not see violence happen. So, I mean, the fact that they showed up ready with the screen, I think, is fantastic. The fact that they showed up ready with Black Bloc gear, even if it was pink, it's still Black Bloc gear. Yeah. It's de-individuation. It allows you to get away with crimes. There's a whole bunch of things going on there that I'm kind of not very happy about. At least, I mean, the helmet guy, if anything else, he was there with his face out.
Yeah.
You know, he had his convictions.
I think he's an idiot, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, no.
He, like, I came and smashed people in the face and was, like, smiling at cameras. I'm like, are you... Yeah. An actual idiot.
Like. Well, it's like there's that case of the woman in the States who might face 2 to 20 years in prison because she was going around in grocery stores opening ice cream containers, licking it and putting it back. And it posted it all on social media and then was surprised when the police found her.
Well, I think the police in that random aside, that case, they're not pressing charges because it was, I think the...
It is a public endangerment.
Yeah, they're not an adult, I think.
Was the issue. Well, they're going to get tried, but not as an adult. But still, I mean, it's absolutely insane. Same thing with the bike lock basher in Berkeley 2 years ago. There's all sorts of pictures of him smiling on Twitter before he went to the protest. And then again, he was surprised that the police found him. It's absolutely astounding. I mean, this is why Black Bloc covers its face, but then they all take, you know, group photos with each other before and after. It's so bizarre.
So this guy, Cameron Crouch, I don't know how to say that name, but I'm going to assume it's Crouch.
I'd say Crouch.
He is from the Queers Against Hate.
Okay.
And he's also the chair of the Hamilton Liaison Committee. So a committee of organizers and community members and the city council.
Right.
He said that the arrest of Van der Weed, the guy that smashed people's face in with a helmet, should have happened on the day, not a week and a half later.
Well, it should have happened as soon as they have evidence.
Well, I think this feeds into the issue that the police weren't there.
The police weren't
actively responding to prevent the violence. And that was a part of it before, that there was a debate. One of the police officers... said,
and the police were there. They were just at the other end of the park where they were told to be. But again, as we discussed last week, the police should have said, no, there's a group going around Southern Ontario for 3 years now. We should at least have a couple officers nearby. Yeah. So, I mean, this is a situation where everyone's a little bit wrong.
So, there's a police source that told the CBC that, you know, they were deployed there. But they would have been deployed differently if they were invited to participate in Pride, which for me was almost a bit...
Sour grapesy.
Yeah, it's a bit like a petulant child. Like, well, I'd have been there a lot more if you invited me. You know, and it's like, really, that's not the vibe. You are a public servant. Yeah. You're supposed to protect the public. And there's a guy smashing people's heads in with a helmet, and you don't show up until a week later?
And there's a slight difference between saying we would have deployed differently if we were invited versus we would have been deployed differently if we weren't asked to not be there.
Mm-hmm.
Because the second way, which both of those statements kind of contain the same information, but the second way says we were asked to not be there, so we deployed in a way that allowed us to be there just in case. But if we had been on the scene... then it would have been different versus we weren't allowed to set up a table. And so therefore we just threw the whole thing under the bus. Now I can say that a lot of other prides in Ontario, because I have spoken to people through a little bit of a network. I don't have as much of a network as I used to have. You know, time happens, people move on, and then you don't know who the new person is. But anyway, a lot of prides across Ontario are starting to look at this very seriously from the perspective of, you know, maybe we should just have the police there and try to figure out how to have the police there without them having a strong presence.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't want them to table, if you don't want them to recruit, then that's one thing. But they should at least be around the corner where you can't see them, but they're less than a minute's walk. You know, that we've got to find a way to secure the scene, because you do have a responsibility as a festival director. And this is something that I learned back when I used to sit on the board of a festival. That you do have a responsibility to ensure the safety of your attendees.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just hope we learn something from this about, you know, the importance of security and that, you know, our relationship with the police is not ideal. If you read anything about Canadian history and you learn about Operation Soap and you learn about the Montreal Olympic cleanups, or if you learn about the fruit machine scandal, if you learn about Little Sisters in Vancouver,
yeah.
If you learn about any of that stuff, you'll just be like, oh, that's why we have a bad relationship. But still, security is so important.
I think you're right. And I think that it's on everyone to be involved. City council, the mayor,
yeah,
the pride organizers.
The police themselves.
The police themselves. Now, I don't think that the police have the same vehicle for, like, I think you're thinking, like, in Ottawa, there's a seat, which is where the organizers in the city and the services come together.
Because I've seen events where either somebody from city bylaw or the paramedics will look at something and they'll say, I think you should get an officer in the room. I don't think this is as safe as you think it is. Like, I've seen that happen. Mm. So usually the first responders check each other's work.
Yeah, but I don't know if that happened in Hamilton, because two of the city councillors are arguing for an independent review of Hamilton Police's response. And included in that review is the fact that they want to see a new engagement protocol when preparing safety and security measures. So actually engaging with the organizers of events.
Right.
So what you're suggesting may not have been in place in Hamilton, but now maybe should be.
Well, I mean, we take it for granted. Like, I've volunteered for festivals before, but Ottawa was the first time I was involved in festivals from an organizational point of view. And the Ottawa festivals are very well organized. Ottawa is the Canadian capital of festivals. There is at least two festivals going on every single weekend during the summer. And then
it's like 4 or 5 right now.
During the winter, there's a whole bunch of other ones as well, because Ottawa festivals gets bored and they're like, second week of February, nothing's going on. What do you want? I don't know. Let's just do a hot cider festival. Let's just make up a festival.
The snowplow festival. The
And they will, and they'll do it, and they'll pilot it. There'll be like a 1-year festival completely dedicated to fudge or something, and it'll do okay, and then maybe they'll do it, and it doesn't matter. But they're very well organized here, and they do take security very, very seriously. But
this is something that all towns and cities can learn from. Like, we were flabbergasted, and I use this word very correctly.
Yeah.
We were flabbergasted.
Because I remember first time we both sat down, we were reading together, and it was just each of us being like, what? And then the other one be like, what?
I'm talking about this other time we were flabbergasted when apparently Toronto Police, doesn't have a missing persons unit. And we're like, how on earth?
What?
They get about 4,200 missing person cases a year.
Yeah.
And they don't have a unit on it. It's flabbergasted.
It goes into a general pool for investigation.
Yeah.
They don't specialize.
There is now. In the end of 2018, they launched one.
And I can understand a general pool for investigators, because, like, if you have a week with no missing persons, then you have like 5 missing persons investigators just sitting around doing nothing, which, by the way, never happens, because they always have cold cases. Because I've spoken with missing persons people before. But
this is all to my point.
That yeah.
We assume, one assumes that, you know, the police have a missing persons unit, or that the policing of a pride parade, there was a conversation between pride and the police.
Yeah.
You know, we cannot assume that these things happen. And I think this serves as a very important lesson to prides, big and small, towns, municipalities, big and small, that it is important to get all of the stakeholders in the room having a conversation. Because it doesn't always happen.
And it's so amazing that city halls and police forces and paramedics and bylaw and all of them in the different cities operate completely differently from one another, and it's just mind-blowing that you're in Canada and you can go from one city to the next and they don't have a missing persons unit, or they don't have a break-in and enter unit, or they don't have a child whatever unit. And it's just it's mind-blowing. You'd think that it'd be more standardized than that.
When you were talking to your mum,
right,
your source on the ground, what we're kind of getting out of a lot of the media reporting is a feeling of exasperation and almost desperation in the pride advocates.
Yeah.
The fact that there's a lot of people who are fighting against the anti-gay protesters that got arrested, and the anti-gay protesters, all of one of them,
yeah,
has been prevented, and there was a police questions about police conduct in terms of its reaction and preparedness for it.
Yeah.
So with all that being said, I think personally that these pro-Pride protesters maybe went too far. They've argued that the mayor does not care about queer people, and they argued this with lots of signage in on his front lawn.
Yes.
Yeah, so they went to his street, to his house, trapping him and his family inside, now, and protested immediately outside on the front lawn.
Eisenberger, Mayor Eisenberger, is the first mayor in about 40 years to obviously have zero mob connections. Hamilton is a mob city, all right? It is an old organized crime city, for sure. The past year, there have been a few house explosions, a few gangsters found dead at the bottom of waterfalls. There's 150 waterfalls in Hamilton. There's a lot of places to find a dead gangster. So, I mean, like, the turf wars are booting up again, and Eisenberg is one of the people who stopped that. So he is a good mayor, and he does care about queer people, but I think what's happening here is we're seeing the result of a lot of gatekeeping problems where you have a lot of gatekeepers in the queer community who don't want the community to talk to the police. You have a lot of gatekeepers in the police who don't want patrol officers to talk to the community. The patrol officers in Hamilton, I've mentioned this before, are some of the most friendly that I've met in Canada and very, very, very queer positive if you're talking about boots on the ground. People in City Hall are incredibly sympathetic, but they're being gatekept by City Council, who, quite frankly, most city councilors are Zabel Beeble boxes. They're people who got into office because they're the least deserving.
That's a very wild accusation to make of...
I mean, have you met city councilors?
I've met a few that I'm quite fond of.
There's one in 10 who are like, you're a cool person, because you and I both know a couple people who are super cool. I would happily sit down and have a drink.
But we can't say that of all city councillors, and we can't say that of all Hamilton city councillors.
No, obviously, yeah. But I mean, you just need one bad gatekeeper to ruin it for everyone, where you have a whole bunch of people who are very firm in the idea that this is how it is, and I have declared myself the speaker of this entire group, and you have a whole bunch of people in the background going, no, wait a minute, that's not fair. So we're seeing sort of the outcome of what happens where people who believe themselves to be the speaker of a group getting into a position of power without consulting. And there's a whole bunch of lack of communication happening right here.
Yeah, from all sides.
From all sides. There's a whole communication piece that needs to happen where, you know, if you were to tell a community group, okay, look, we've been told by City Hall, either we guarantee security by either having the police present, or we have to pay for our own security, which will almost definitely mean corporate funding, or we can't have the event, and put it in front of the public and say, like, these are your options.
Yeah.
And if they say, we'll just not have Pride, we'll just cancel Pride because we would rather not have Pride than have the police involved, if that's what the community choose, then it's what it chooses. It's not ideal, but it's up to them. But I mean, there is that missing step where you have a lot of people not consulting with the people that they're supposed to represent, declaring themselves all knowledgeable. And it's the chief of police, it's some of the protesters, it's certain key members within City Hall. There's a whole bunch of people, and this is definitely something that's happening. And I'm very uncomfortable with gatekeeping. And it's not just in this, but there's been other times before when you and I have had a talk, and I'm just like, I don't like how that person declares themselves to be right. And this is, I mean, this goes back to a conversation we had earlier, if you know the one I'm referring to. I don't know, I'm the whole thing is frustrating, and a lot of people just need to talk to the people that they are supposed to be representing a little bit more. And, like, there's a lot of complaints about the chief of police here in Ottawa because he makes a lot of, like, snap decisions.
Well, I think there's a new one, though, isn't there?
Well, yeah. But the previous one, if you sit him down, like, please talk to the people you represent. And he'll be like, oh, yeah, I forgot to do that. And then he will. He'll be like, you know what? You were right and I was wrong. And you need to have that maturity to be like, I am going to actually consult with the people that I'm supposed to represent. And hopefully that will start happening more.
I think we find ourselves in situations where we expect people to know all things. Now, if you throw your mind back to New Brunswick, and it was a small town, like almost a village, right, between Moncton and Fredericton, I think. It was like on the drive, tiny village.
I know the story.
That raised raised the straight flag.
Yeah.
And everyone around the world was like, oh my God, this crazy town.
They're all hetero, sexual, homophobic, transphobic. Yeah. They hate people. Yeah.
And the flag was up for like, I think it was like 18 hours. All of the amount of time it took some of Armageddon to fall down on this tiny village. And it was the municipal people in charge just simply didn't know.
Yeah.
And they didn't know the context, they didn't know the reasons, they didn't know the impact and effect of it. And I think we get a little bit of that. I'm not excusing the behavior of council and the mayor, but like, for example, the mayor has been lambasted for being radio silent after this violence broke out at Pride for about 2 days.
Okay.
He was also lambasted for the fact that the first people arrested are... queer or queer advocates, mm-hmm. not the protesters,
mm-hmm.
The anti-Pride protesters. He was also lambasted for the fact that, you know, he seems almost tone deaf to the community. And I think when you're in a crisis situation like that, knowing exactly how to respond is the work of a PR firm. You know what I mean? It takes being able to react quickly the right way with a volatile audience, and a gay community that's just had a Pride parade attacked is a volatile audience.
Oh, yeah.
I would be if that was my community.
Yeah.
Knowing how and what to say is a major challenge. So I think, on the one hand, I don't think the mayor did himself any favors.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that they tried to have a consultation and it wasn't done using the infrastructure in place. You disagree about the gatekeeping. I think those gatekeepers, which are the organizations, do serve a purpose, and cutting them out doesn't help.
They serve a purpose, but I think they're taking it too far.
But they also argue that the mayor didn't invite any trans or non-binary people. So it's like, you know, the mayor may also just be unaware and blind to some of these other elements.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my point here, is that, you know, one of your thing is why, one of the things you tell us a lot is why look for malice where incompetence is a good solution.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and I do not think that the mayor was necessarily being malicious here.
It's known as Hamlin's razor.
But I do think that the mayor may simply have just not been aware.
Yeah.
And I think that there is a cacophony of some mistakes, a cacophony of mis- or non-communication,
mm-hmm.
and some genuine bad actors who came in with the purpose of being violent. And
yes.
I think those are the people that need to have all hell rain down upon them, such as the nutter with a helmet, Christopher Underwood.
Oh, for sure, yeah. I mean, to be fair to the counter-protesters, the Black Bloc folks, they showed up prepared in case there was violence, but they didn't show up for violence.
Mm-hmm.
If no violence happened, they would have probably just gone home and been like, well, I got all dolled up for nothing. Whereas the crazy religious right people, if they showed up and there was no violence, that would have been a wasted day. Like, there's a difference between the two, where being prepared for just in case and showing up in order to,
those
are very different.
Not all of the anti-Pride protesters appeared to be geared up for violence. Just some of them definitely were.
Well, okay, fair enough. Yeah. That's a fair critique.
So we're going to jump to Ever Again by Robin. Now, wanted Robin. You watched a documentary about her recently.
A little mini documentary last night. I love Robin. I'm always disappointed that Robin is not bigger in North America. But then, do you remember it was an internet-only web series, and it was all about two ex-boyfriends, and it was based in New York. I can't remember what it was called. I'm going to look it up during the break, because it was like one of the best queer content things I've ever seen. And there's one scene where his phone goes off and he has a Robin song as his ringer, and then everyone's like, everyone knows you're gay, and he's like, it's just Robin. And they're like, only gay men Europeans and friends of gay men and Europeans know about Robin. And it's weirdly true. Robin is fantastic. She was a studio production in the 90s, and then they tried to ship her over to the States. She's Swedish. They tried to ship her over to the States. She said, nah. So they took everything they had put together for Robin, and then they just gave it.
And they farmed it out.
Yeah, they just gave all of it to... how could I forget her name? I just said it
earlier.
Britney Spears. So Britney Spears... her entire career was supposed to be Robin. But then they took that and then they tried to make Robin into the thing that people were imitating her. And she's like, I'm not going to imitate someone who's imitating me. That's stupid. So she went independent and there's this whole thing. And then she did Dancing on My Own. And it was, oh, it was such an epic tale of just like, it's almost as good as Cher, except that Robin doesn't have two animated series, two variety shows, like the whole EGOT thing, you know, but one day Robin will be in a movie and she'll do her Bjork thing where she'll do her award-winning movie. And oh man, obviously I'm gushing a little bit about Robin. Yeah. Let's just go. It's her first album in 10 years. And I think it's called Honey.
Ever After, I think it is.
No, that's the name of the song.
Oh, okay.
I think the album is called Honey.
Okay, well,
anyway, we're going to go
this
with Robin.
This is Ever Again by Robin, and we'll be back just after this. Queer home of Canada's queer major. My name is Luke Smith.
And I am Sebastian.
And I just love making gay radio.
Do you?
I don't know about you. Is this something that you like doing?
Well, I mean, I like making radios gay.
Oh, like putting little rainbows on them, and
getting
two radios together
and putting them on top of each other.
But like, there's cables, like, and then, USB cables, like male to female or male to male cables, and like those are the ones with don't have the ports on them.
You can get male to male adapters.
Yeah. So are they gay adapters then? Is that what?
Well,
they
I
are?
Mean, I guess
are so, they yeah. early gay adapters? Bam bam.
I mean, you could also call them a sleeve.
Oh. Which in... I'm gonna not make the joke I wanted to make so that this can make the radio edit. Okay, so...
Somebody out there knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think somebody knew where I was going to go with that. So let's get back to stories and the news. And we did talk a little bit Hamilton. We talked about Hamilton last week.
Yeah, I would love to talk about something else. Let's talk about Alberta.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a cheerful change in conversation topic. Now...
Not Toronto, and that's the main thing.
Yeah, so Alberta's an interesting egg, you know what I mean? And I think all of our listeners countrywide can agree with the assessment that Alberta is an interesting egg.
I think Alberta would probably agree with that
assessment. Alberta would also agree with the assessment. I mean, it's so weird, because you've got, like, you know, Metro Calgary, and the gay stampede came back this year.
Did you hear about that?
Yeah, yeah, it's when all the homos found out there's a discount at the flag store. I'm just kidding, that's not a but no, it was, as a part of the Calgary stampede, there's a whole gay thing.
I would love to go to a gay rodeo and see gay rodeo clowns try to destroy a gay bull while a gay cowboy tries to ride it. Like, that would be a fun party. If there's cheap beer.
The funny side story.
I'm not even a beer drinker, but I refuse to go to the rodeo and not drink beer.
I know. I mean, you can't.
You can't.
There's rules. I bet they sell non-alcoholic beer just so that everyone can have a beer when they go there.
Non-alcoholic beer actually tastes pretty good. It's the taste of beer can be nice.
So I wanted to talk about Alberta. So they passed a bill... I think it was Bill 8. Let me just get the number right here.
I'm calling it a bill is a little bit... When you explained to me... Because I knew bits and pieces, but then you explained to me the full scope of the bill.
So Bill 8 is the Education Amendment Act. Now, a lot of Canadians probably would have heard that Bill 8 was... it led to the largest or the longest running...
filibuster.
Alberta session.
Yeah.
Not session, but like essentially the debate started round about Wednesday night and kept going nonstop until Friday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Like the NDP got up on every point, every single one of them had something to say. The Conservatives, who were just trying to get that done, did not have as much to say except to criticize the NDP for what they said was re-arguing the election in the room.
Okay.
So the NDP lost the election. That is what it is, and the will of the Alberta public has resulted in that. But a lot of the media response and a lot of the gay media reaction to Bill 8, the Education Amendment Act, is that this is a major rollback on LGBT rights in Alberta. Now, we have also previously talked about the fact that the United Conservative Party, the UCLP, I think it's UCLP is their acronym, but the United Conservatives in Alberta, they are keen, they were keen to sort of roll back some of the NDP era GSA stuff that was in Alberta. The details were... vague. They're all about protecting children, but also the rights of the parent, and it was just this all ongoing debate. Now, Bill 8 passed after 40 hours of filibustering, and the LGBT community in Alberta has certainly taken a hit as a result of that.
Yeah.
And one of the concerns is that gay straight alliances do not now have the same protections that they had before. So the NDP had a bill, I want to say it was Bill 24, I think, that meant that there was a privacy expectation that if you were attending a gay straight alliance, that the teacher didn't immediately, like, Facebook message your parents being like, hey, Charles Ahomo in this club.
What is it with you and Facebook Messenger? I don't know. This is why, like, I block you.
Maybe somebody sends a letter. The idea is
send an email or a text. Who sends everything on Facebook Messenger?
Because I'm usually sending you videos of things. Oh, and anyway, back to the point. But the idea was that there's privacy protections that the school wouldn't out kids to their parents.
Yes. Yeah.
Because, and we talked about this from the LGBT perspective,
yeah,
that homeless youth are disproportionately LGBT,
yes,
because
yeah,
parents freak out, yeah, and they kick kids to the curb. That is not hyperbole, that is fact.
Yeah.
That as a result of toxic households and domestic violence resulting from someone being gay and
yeah,
other factors, obviously, that a lot of people who are homeless are disproportionately likely to be gay.
And the discussion of banning, not reparative therapy. What's the thing that I'm looking for?
It is reparative or conversion therapy.
Conversion therapy, that's it. The discussion around banning conversion therapy is not going as quickly in Alberta. So,
well, it's a province by province approach. I think the yeah, feds need to step up, and we'll touch on that so again.
Ontario is finalizing the process of altogether banning it.
Mm.
I think
Ontario has actually.
It's all but banned, but they're finalizing, like, they're giving it clear definitions currently. But from what I understand, Alberta has just sort of said, yeah, you can't force somebody into therapy, but that doesn't. What does it mean to force somebody? There's all sorts of, like, mm-hmm, you volunteer someone else into, you know, alcohol recovery or something like that. Like, that is legal. So, mm-hmm, I mean, there's ways around it that they haven't really closed the loopholes yet. So, Alberta has its own issues with that. And in extreme circumstances, this is something we talked about during the break, there is good cause. Like, the usual thing, like missing persons. You know, where is my child? My child is missing. The school says, oh no, we know where they are. Don't worry, they'll be home at 7. Why are they at the school right now? That's up to your kid to decide, to mm-hmm, tell you. But if the kid truly is missing, then you have to reveal to the police, like, no, normally they would be at the GSA. They weren't there. Here are all the other witnesses who were the last people to see them. Mm-hmm. Now you have to reveal.
It's a public safety
but
priority.
But that's a public yeah, safety thing. That's a completely specific issue. And that's separate. Whereas I think if you had, like, I like the idea that only the principal and the teachers who supervise the GSA have the right to do that. And other teachers do not have the right to reveal anything to anyone.
So,
because you're not going to put somebody who is homophobic mm-hmm, and is just going to start telling everyone about their bi daughter on social mm-hmm, media, that kind of person's not going to head the GSA.
So the concern was that the NDP bill provided specific privacy protections for these GSAs.
Yes.
And Bill 8 rolled some of those back. It now defaults from specific protections to the general protections under privacy law in Alberta.
Okay.
So, generally speaking, there has to be a very, very, very good reason why you're telling them that piece of information. So, what that does...
How are they defining what a very good
yeah, reason well, it's is. Extreme circumstances. And that's the issue.
Yeah.
This is something where me and the LGBT advocates, I think, are on the same page. I think for the vast majority of the public school system in Alberta, these protections are enough. I think yeah, that these school boards aren't going to go out outing all of these students.
Yeah.
But what it does for some of the private schools, which may be, I think Alberta is the Christian charter schools, is it gives them the wiggle room that the NDP bill did not allow for.
Yeah.
And it gives them that thin veil that they can choose to hide behind. If they do out them. And I think for me, that's the issue.
Yeah.
But I wanted to just touch back on Bill 8. It wasn't just a bill designed to roll back these privacy protections. It is a massive bill that overhauled a 40-year-old education bill in Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the details of the bill, it has everything from the size and the scale and the scope of a school board, who votes, how you vote, when you vote.
Yeah.
It has everything in it.
Quite frankly, every
province. A tiny portion yeah, of it was this bill.
Every province in Canada needs to reform its education system.
Yeah.
All of us do.
So yeah, I don't disagree with the need for the reform. I think the NDP were trying to achieve three key things. And one of the things that they wanted to do is to set up a strict timeline on how long it takes a principal to set up a GSA. because what they have found is that LGBT students are reaching out to the NDP and to other organizers being like, we'll tell the principal, we'll tell them we want to set up a GSA. The principal will eventually provide the necessary paperwork.
Mm.
And then, you know, there's timelines and deadlines and a review process and a decision-making process. And whoops-a-daisy, the gay students graduated. So now you have to start again because there's new people in charge. So it's the argument was being made that some of the principals in the schools were just waiting out the activist students who wanted to set this up. And that's unfair.
Yeah.
Because the setup work is a difficult, challenging thing. But by continuing to fight it and silence it and just wait them out, it sets a very silencing tone for other students. You know what I mean? So that was the first thing they wanted to address, which the amendments were rejected and they didn't get it. The second thing was to keep policies consistent from public and private schools. So I mentioned that some of the private schools there are Christian charter schools. And the idea was that there shouldn't be two separate systems or two different levels of rights and access.
Yes.
That also failed. And then there was also that teachers and staff couldn't be fired based on sexual orientation. We talked before about the woman who was fired for having an extramarital affair with a man. It was a straight extramarital affair.
Okay.
But it was an extramarital affair, and she was fired from her job as a teacher in Alberta.
Okay.
And it was that point that the schools are able to make these moral firings.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who are homosexual or aren't heteronormative were freaking out a bit about that.
Well, yeah, you would. Yeah.
That also failed and wasn't passed. So the point was that the Conservatives, the United Conservative Party, argues that there's enough protections, there's other privacy legislation, there's other codes and conducts and rules, and the system is robust enough. They have the most robust system in all of Canada. They're fine. The NDP have pointed out to some very clear areas where improvements can be made.
Yeah.
And where I fall on this is I do not think that, much like the rest of gay media, which has been decrying this outrage, I think that there are very legitimate concerns with some of these gaps, some of these areas that clearly need improving. But I do not think it is the end of the world that's maybe been prophesized by some of the other media outlets. What are your thoughts?
Well, for me, and this comes back to probably all my training as an academic, the way that you've described it so far, and actually the things that I've read as well, I'm okay with all of it. I'm just very fussy about definitions. So long as they have clear definitions about what is okay, what is not okay, what counts as an extreme circumstance, what counts as protection, how are they defining things? With clear definitions, I have no problem with anything so far. The only problem is that I don't trust other people to make clean and clear definitions because, as I said, I'm very fussy about that kind of thing.
Now, before we wrap up the show, I did want to tip my hat to Olivia Nuama, which rarely ever happens, the executive director of Toronto Pride.
You're not going
to
tip your hat to my mum?
And, well, of course, I tip my hat to your mum all the time. But I wanted to tip my hat to Olivia Nuama and the
Toronto Pride Committee?
Yeah, well, that...
Well, no, this was her pet project as well. This wasn't a... I mean, Pride obviously was involved, but this was her idea and her pet project.
Yeah.
And it's clever. It's very clever. Do you know what? Before we praise it, why don't you... Yeah.
So, Pride, a non-profit group called Trace Labs... They're a group that helps to find missing people. And the Toronto Police Cyber Crimes Unit had a hackathon where LGBT or allied hackers came together, sort of white hat hackers, the good guys.
Yes.
And they data mined public social media feeds. They did research of publicly accessible databases, you know, the library.
Mm-hmm.
They also accessed black web sites. Now, it's not illegal to go to these sites.
Dark web, sorry.
And all under the enthusiastic supervision of the Toronto Cyber Crimes Unit. Well, not in supervision, engagement with Cyber Crimes Unit. And they focused the whole day on trying to find missing persons.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was such a beautiful way of taking an event that's like these hackathons that are popular compute techie type event that's been springing up. And it addresses the core issue of the police reaction to the Bruce MacArthur murders and the accused allegations of just lack of motivation and effective investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings the community in into doing literally that work.
Yes.
And the cybercrimes unit there to also kind of verify and check and follow any leads if any came up.
Well, the police have limited resources, and that's just a fact. And even if they have a lot of resources, it's still limited. They have mm-hmm. finite resources, and their ability to track people down is limited by those resources. Whereas distributed network computing, so that would be just a whole bunch of people at computers doing independent work,
yeah.
collectively will always be more powerful than the police. Or if there is something more nefarious, like a human trafficking network, it's been proven that you can actually identify them and break them up through these kind of events. It's really quite amazing.
Well, I think she's done a really good job of finding an event that does begin to build the relationship between the police and the community.
Yes.
Even if it's just in a small way.
Yes.
And I think that this was a really well done approach. So, like I said, we tip our hats.
It connects people who care from the community with people who care from the police. Mm-hmm. So you're getting the best of both sides
yeah.
to build that bridge. And it's not this sort of forceful, let's...
And it's a good example for other communities yeah. to look at as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, just before we wrap up, I think there is some important things that we need to take into account. We heard from some folks over at Hamilton who got back to us very quickly after the podcast first initially went online. And if you're listening to this, we've added this in at the end. But I think what's important that we wanted to make this sort of extra effort to address is... There were some areas which we got wrong. We'll be providing a link on our website to a bit more of an accurate timeline. But really, the essence of where we need to clarify is around the police participation. So we mentioned earlier about the seat, and we mentioned earlier about communication needed to be improved with the police. Well, let's be very clear here. The Pride organizers, the parade takes part, it's not really a parade, but it all takes part in the park. So it's all taking part in the park. They need the permit to have the park. The police saw the permit. They knew it's happening in the park. The organizers had a pretty good feeling that the protesters are going to be in the exact same place, you know, even down to the exact same tree. And yet, you know, the police weren't, you know, unaware of these things. They'd been told in advance that they're expecting more protesters than last year. There were protesters last year, and the Hamilton police should have prepared accordingly to that. And I think that's important to address, that there was some communication from the Hamilton Pride folks. By the way, we also found out that the Hamilton Pride folks only incorporated last year. The parade had been going on for many, many, many years, and there had been, you know, there's certainly some backlog and some as omission users there, but as with a lot of prides, this is community-driven, community-organized. They're all volunteers, and handling security like this is very, it's a big consideration that everyone needs to take care of very carefully. But we want to be very clear that the organizers had reached out to the police in advance, and they were told about this in advance, and there were many options where they could have been nearby, but not in a recruitment booth on site. So I think that needs to be taken into account when we're looking at police engagement on this. Now, touching quickly before we finish on the mayor's meeting, just to add some more clarity there, we talked earlier about the fact that the invite list wasn't available. Well, in fact, it was an invite-only meeting. And one of the reasons why organizers, community delegates and organizers had been choosing not to, in fact, we feared the majority of them chose not to attend, is because there's no accountability. The mayor wasn't tackling this public issue in a public way, and rather picking and choosing specifically who the mayor would address, including no trans folks that we were made aware of. And so as a result, a lot of people are turning down that meeting. It sounds like communication does remain a major issue. But I think the lessons to be learned are more on the side of the city than it may be on the side of Pride. We'll be keeping an eye on it as it develops, and keeping you updated as we go. So we've run out of time. We're playing out with Peaches. Boys want to be her. And we didn't get round to the knife with Heartbeats, which I think we said was an influence
with Robin?
Robin,
oh, yeah.
But we are going to play out with Peaches. Boys want to be her. I did like... oh my God, I'm forgetting his name now.
You've written it down right there, Mika.
No, it's not Mika. Oh, okay. It was not Troye Sivan. Oh my gosh, what's his name? Oh, it'll
Bob Newman.
No, anyway, it'll come to me. Well, next week we'll let
Adam
know.
Adam West.
Anyway, that's all we have time for. This is Boys Wanna Be Her. I've been Nick Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
Listen up, voices scatter, listen up, listen up.